Let's do it then. All right. Good morning. I now call to order the May 22nd, 2025 meeting of the Arizona State Board for Private Post-Secondary Education to order. The time is 10 a.m. Pursuant to Arizona Revised Statutes 38-431-02, notice has hereby been given to the general public and the members of the Arizona State Board for Private Post-Secondary Education that the board is holding a meeting open to the public on this date and time. This meeting is being held digitally via Google Meet platform. A complete meeting agenda, including the list of applicants scheduled for consideration, is available on the board's website at ppse.az.gov. Please note the board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda with exception of matters set for a specific time, such as formal hearings and interviews. However, the chair reserves the right to call cases in different orders. Furthermore, pursuant to the Arizona Revised Statutes 38-431-03A3, the board may, upon a majority vote of quorum of the members, hold an executive session on any items listed on the agenda for the purpose of obtaining legal advice. Before we start, could we take a quick roll call, Mr. Lamont?
Mr. Romano?
Here.
Mr. Romano is present. Dr. Mittman?
I see Paul.
Dr. Mittman?
He's waving. He's at least
he's waving. All right. As long as he's waving, then we're all good. All right. Dr. Mittman is here. Mr. Ball?
Here.
Mr. Ball is here. Ms. Kelly? I see Ms. Kelly as well.
Here. Sorry.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Ms. Kelly is here. His staff, I'm Kevin Lamont, Executive Director. Jacqueline Rome?
Here.
Jacqueline is here. Ms. Noelle Vetter?
Present.
Ms. Noelle Vetter is here. And Assistant Attorney Jean Gavin?
Present.
And Jean is here. So we do have two board members absent today, and that would be Dr. Leck and Dr. Butte.
And we miss them. All right. Okay, let's do a quick just declaration of conflict of interest against ARS 38503. Any conflicts of interest to declare board members? Nope. All right, hearing none, we will continue to move on. Next item concerns the minutes of the previous meeting. As a reminder, the board policy is to audio record all meetings and post them on the website as the official minutes. Mr. Lamont, can you confirm that the audio minutes for the April 24, 2025 meeting have been posted and are audible?
Mr. Romano, members of the board, I can confirm that that is accurate.
Very good. Can I have a motion to approve those minutes? I will take Dr. Mittman's raising of his hand as acknowledgement. And do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Appreciate that. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Mr. Lamont, would you please take call?
Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. That's four ayes, no nays. That motion will pass.
Very good. Thank you very much. Understanding we are under a little bit of a time constraint today to keep our quorum, which is no big deal. Mr. Lamont, you've been very generous in regards to putting together an agenda that is very reasonable for us. So it's not that we would necessarily be rushed in talking about these schools. But we did say for the sake of this to help us move on, maybe for the next item of the review and discussion of the executive director's report, that we would not necessarily have an audible report, although you have provided very good details in our files for us to review. So I will just pause for a moment, Ms. Lamont, if there's anything significant that you would like to bring forward from that report that you feel is valuable, please do so at this time, and then I'll open it up to questions.
Mr. Romano, members of the board, no, there is nothing in addition to what has already been provided to the board members.
Any questions from the fellow board members? All right. Well, we will certainly wish you a safe journey on the CQ visit next week. You should have a good time on that, and I'm sure a lot of learnings as well. Okay, so we will move on to our next item, number four. I'm sorry, we're actually at number six. That's how fast we're moving at this point, which is review and discussion and possible action on the following consent agreements, and that being for LifeWork Education, which I'm taking the lead on. And we, just to validate, we have, is it Frank Swigger who's attending, and Ann Cartwright?
That's correct.
Okay. And Mr. Lamont, would you like to take just a moment to set the stage for this?
Certainly. We, in our last board meeting last month, reviewed LifeWork. It was a referral from the Finance Committee to the full board regarding some of the challenges that LifeWork is currently and has been under. The board agreed in the April board meeting to provide a consent agreement that offered probation and a number of other items, which would include a bond, the transcripts, the teach out plan. So that was submitted to LifeWork after that meeting. In subsequent meetings that we've had with Ms. Cartwright, who's their legal counsel, and Mr. Swigger, we have realized that there are some items that the institution would like to have a discussion with the board on. All that information has been provided to you, both the revised consent agreement that was sent to us from LifeWork, along with the original order and the current order as it stands now. So, and I know Ms. Cartwright and Mr. Swigger are here.
Very good. Mr. Swinger, Ms. Cartwright, would you like to take a moment, understanding we've had a chance to review the red lines that you've provided in the recommendation for the consent, but would you like to provide any opening statement to that?
Thank you. Again, I'm Annie Cartwright. I'm counsel to LifeWork. First, we'd like to thank the board for its time this morning. I will try not to take too much time, knowing that you are on a time constraint. First, I would like to emphasize that LifeWork really is committed to not just meeting, but owning its compliance responsibilities and making sure that any board concerns are addressed. LifeWork acknowledges that it was delayed in providing a required notice to the Arizona PPSE. At the same time, I'd like to offer that a letter of concern, given all the circumstances here, may be the most appropriate route for addressing the board's concerns, and I'd like to take a minute to explain why. As the board is aware, its options include issuing a letter of concern as well as disciplinary probation, but a letter of concern would officially put the school on notice that it needs to modify its practices going forward and confirm that it would be subject to discipline going forward if it continues along a non-compliant path. LifeWork was several days late in providing a direct notice from LifeWork to AZPPSE of an extension of a pre-existing show cause order from ABHES, LifeWork's institutional accreditor. I want to clarify that that wasn't a change in LifeWork's accreditation status. It was an extension. It didn't reflect any sort of new investigation. And it was to give LifeWork some time so it could provide some additional information to confirm that it was in compliance with ABHES expectations. I understand that LifeWork has now provided that information, completed all currently required steps under that show cause extension, and is on ABHES's agenda for its upcoming meeting and anticipates that it will be removed from show cause status at that meeting. LifeWork has already implemented not only the ABHES requirements, but some related KHEF requirements around its paramedic program. And we don't certainly see this as an excuse for the delay in providing the notice, but to provide some context, the delay occurred shortly after two of LifeWork's key leaders, who were responsible for regulatory compliance, resigned. They certainly resigned without notice to LifeWork, and we understand that they're starting another institution. During that time, LifeWork was understandably most focused on continuing operations and providing service and support to students. And it was, again, delayed by a few days in providing the required notice directly from LifeWork to AZPPSE. But I will note that ABHES did provide the letter immediately to AZPPSE, so it had actual notice immediately. But since that time, LifeWork has taken a number of steps to make sure that it prevents recurrence and otherwise strengthens operations. First, it's implemented some redundancies, not just in things like record sharing, but also leadership and regulatory responsibilities, general operational management. It has placed a new EMS program director, a school program and a school and program administrator, a campus director, and a medical director. It's added some teaching staff and proctors, and also added some additional expertise to the EMS program's advisory board, so that people with additional experience in running programs are on that board. So importantly, LifeWork is ready and willing to do the additional items that were included in the original draft consent agreement, if that, those will provide additional assurances to the board. But all these circumstances being the case, we would suggest that a letter of concern appropriately addresses the situation at hand here. I think LifeWork is on a strong upward trajectory, not just in terms of compliance, but overall leadership. And it believes it is now in full compliance and will continue to be, not just with AZPPSE and board requirements, but also all of its accreditation requirements. So we would ask that you consider a letter of concern with whatever additional items the board thinks are appropriate. I'm certainly here to answer any questions, and I know that representatives from the school who have firsthand knowledge of the facts at hand here are here as well.
Thank you, Ms. Cartwright. I appreciate that. We'll take just a moment. Mr. O'Mountain, if you would just confirm a few things for maybe the board members. One, after review of this, is it the opinion that a notice should have occurred 24 hours after notification or the 5-day window from a continuation of this? I know there was a little bit of confusion before around that.
Mr. Amon, members of the board, it's within 24 hours of the notification.
Okay. All right. So, and we know in this particular case, it really occurred about 8 days later from that standpoint for the reasons that the institution has provided some unexpected turnover in the individuals and their acknowledgement of that piece of it. Also, historically speaking, in this case, my understanding has been we really haven't had previous issues with LifeWork Education, and they have been extremely responsive to our requests and the communication process back and forth with the board staff. Is that accurate?
Yes, Mr. Romano, members of the board. LifeWork has been on our finance review committee for quite some time due to the financial concerns that we have with the institution. Ms. Cartwright's kind of description of what happened, there was certainly a leadership issue that the individuals left without any notification, both to the institution, to us, and there was then this void of communication that happened as things started to kick back in again. Now with Mr. Swinger, who has done a very good job, in our opinion and staff's opinion, of keeping us updated and communicating effectively with us, we are in a much different position today than we were a few months ago. And I would always give Mr. Swinger and his group kudos for putting us in a much better situation today in terms of keeping us updated.
I think where we're always sensitive as a board is understanding staff changes will occur, sometimes notified, sometimes unnotified or unexpected from that standpoint. But we expect the institutions to have the right structure and management oversight to be able to still deliver on what they have committed to as an institution and what they've agreed to through accepting the licensure to operate in the state of Arizona, which in this case, the school did fall short of, while at the same time, a 12-month probation period for that may be, in this particular case, with additional information, maybe something we've maybe gone a little too far, and the consideration on the table for the board to talk through at this point is probation or letter of concern and some of the other deliverables in the current consent agreement would probably still be beneficial to remain there while at least talking through should it be probation or letter of concern. And one final note, if it is probation, it would require the institution to then, after 12 months, send in a letter of request to essentially be removed versus the letter of concern that would have its own natural maturity date associated with it. Is that correct, Mr. LaMountain?
That is correct.
Okay. And so, board members, I'd open it up for discussion to see what we feel makes the best sense here with the information that we have of whether the pathway for a probation or a that was originally reviewed and approved at the last board meeting or a letter of concern moving to a letter of concern versus the probation. And Dr. Mittman, you were the lead on this for the last meeting, so I want to be respectful as you did make the motion based on the information you have. You may have some initial thoughts that you'd like to share as well.
Sure. Yeah, and thank you, Ms. Cartwright and Mr. Swigger for being here. And you know, that was I would just echo what Mr. LaMountain said with regard to the change of the tenor of the communicate the tenor and frequency and quality of communications and responsibility of the school during the in recent over the past year with new leadership. I think at the time, you know, we often have consent agreement as kind of a as our first option, and I think it has a kind of broad you know, number of components for it. I would say that, you know, in looking at the options that staff and the school have put together, and given the commitment and diligence of the administration of the school, I would be comfortable with option three, which is the letter of concern, and then they'll still be on financial reporting. We could always, you know, if things go in a bad direction, then we can always go back to the consent agreement.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. I appreciate that. Any other questions from fellow board members or any comments? I think, Dr. Mittman, you said it very well, which is this is a process, right? We're here to help support our students that are leveraging these schools and our schools as well from this. And we're not trying to be overburdensome to our schools. So we appreciate the fact that Life Work Education, after reviewing the consent agreement, brought back thoughtful recommendations around other alternatives or other pathways. As we're always trying to be consistent and not necessarily set precedent moving forward, that would devalue the importance of timely communication between notifications to a school from a third party and then ultimately to the Post-Secondary Education Board. We don't want to minimize that part of it either, but we recognize we're not so rigid and fixed that we can't consider other options there. So with that, although you did not necessarily make the motion, Dr. Mittman, I think what I heard was a recommendation to move from the original motion, which was a motion of probation with the consent agreement, to a letter of concern with the consent agreement. Is that an accurate restatement?
Correct. Thank you.
So I'll go ahead and make that motion then, since I just said it out loud, and we'll see if I have a second to that motion.
I'd be happy to second.
Thank you, Dr. Mettman. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion from the board members? Hearing none, Mr. Lamont, would you take roll?
Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. That vote of four ayes, no nays, that motion will pass.
Very good. Thank you very much, Ms. Cartwright and Mr. Swigger, for your time, your attention, and your responses as well. Let's keep that momentum going as you continue to work through those issues. We have the confidence that you will, and we appreciate your time this morning. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you
very much. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, moving on to agenda item number 7, which is review, consideration, and possible action on the following pending license applications. And our first school up is San Joaquin Valley College, where I am the lead on that. So I'm looking at the screen, and it looks like it's checking out okay. And I believe we have representation by Mr. Hendrickson. Mr. Hendrickson, if you are out there, if you would just introduce yourself, understanding that we have had a chance to review the materials, but if you'd like to add an opening statement, you are more than welcome to.
Sure, thank you. Hello, I'm Robert Hendrickson. I'm Vice President of Compliance and Regulatory Affairs with Ember Education, which is the Shared Services Division of San Joaquin Valley College. San Joaquin Valley College, Inc. Is the parent company of both SJVC and Carrington College. We're a family-owned institution of higher learning accredited by the WASC Senior College and University Commission, here to submit our application for the first physical location in the state of Arizona under SJVC, but not the first physical location of the parent company, SJVCI, which owns Carrington and has 4 currently licensed locations in Arizona. I'll keep my remarks brief for the sake of time.
Oh, that's helpful. Thank you. A side note, I was, because I like basketball, I was watching basketball last night, and I actually saw an HVAC commercial for Carrington after reviewing this information. I was like, are we able to do that? So thank you. You are.
Mr. Romano?
Yes.
Could I request that you do not bring up last night's basketball game?
Well, I was merely just saying I was watching it, but I understand that was incredible and painful for many, so totally appreciate and respect that. And I will just make a side note that at least it took the attention off how the Cavaliers dropped the ball against the Pacers, so we'll leave it at that, and we will move on. Don't feel like you have to reflect that in the minutes, Mr. LaMountain, but if you need to, so be it. Okay, so thank you very much, Mr. Hendrickson. We appreciate it, and also the detailed information as well. I had a chance to go through it, obviously operating in other states as well. From this, you're not new to the game, so the materials were very well-prepared, thoughtful, and directional for us. I did have just a couple things that I wanted to try and call out to see if I'm clear. One, there was a payment repayment program that seems to be allowed for the students. It called out a 1% interest rate, but there was nothing there that included whether that was annual, monthly on that piece of it. I'm confident that because that was more of just like a template that was being used to describe it. I'm confident that you include that interest rate in the actual contracts that go with students. I just wanted to call that piece out to you for awareness that if that is a student-facing document you're using, you may want to consider putting whatever term is on that interest rate, that just so a student doesn't become confused on that side of it. At times, we'll have students bring complaints forward. They will bring documentation from the school. And if a student were to bring that forward and say, I didn't realize the time period, then we're in a whole other world on that. Okay?
Understood.
Okay. Thank you. There were also some advertisements that you had, and I was trying to appreciate one in particular. So there was advertisements that talked about 10 months to become an electrician. And that's kind of how it was set up. from that standpoint. And it left me feeling, because I believe there are certification requirements to become an electrician in the state of Arizona. And the advertisements themselves led to a feel of, I take these courses, 10 months later, I'm an electrician, without maybe the working knowledge that there are other requirements associated with that. And that's where we have sensitivity of potentially misleading advertisement and what that looks like. I'm not trying to micro, you know, analyze that piece of it, but more so, again, it's just a reminder as your marketing team takes a look at those materials that certifications aren't necessary. And interestingly enough, in your other programs, you called that out in your headlines of certifications being necessary. But in the case of the electrician, I did not necessarily see that language. So I merely wanted to bring that to your attention so that as you do move forward, that is a requirement truly that you've called it out appropriately.
Understood. Yes.
All right. Very good. And then I think that's really about it. Like I said, you did a very nice job in regards to preparing the materials and those types of things. So obviously a lot of materials that were provided there. So I will pause to see if my fellow board members have any other questions related to the institution or the operation there within. All right, hearing none. I will make the motion that we approve the regular degree granting licensure for San Joaquin Valley College and also continuing to carry the surety bond of $15,000. Do I have
second.
A? Thank
I
you,
second.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank Kelly. You, Ms. Romano.
All right. So any further discussion, board members? Hearing none, Mr. Lamont, if you would.
Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. That's four ayes, no nays. That motion will pass.
Very good. Congratulations, Mr. Hendrickson. We appreciate your time and the preparation in the materials as well. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you very much.
All right. We will now move on to our second school, Common Institutes, which Ms. Kelly, who looks like she's made a full recovery from our last board meeting, will take the lead.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you for accelerating the minute. My first one of my sons is getting married. We have the rehearsal tonight. This is the first one. It's a big deal. So I apologize for miming because I'm talking to people in the room here as well.
But thanks.
I recovered actually in time. I have just a little bit of a bruise left, which I can hide up with makeup. So thank you for the introduction.
It looks fantastic. Yep.
Thank you. So is anyone here from Common Institute? I believe Mr. Carney might be here.
Yes, I'm here. We're also here. Dr. Christian Gonzalez is here as well.
Okay, great, great. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your business plan since you're an initial applicant? Just give us an overview.
Yeah, so just some context. My background, before doing this, I was the founder and sole owner of one of the largest yoga training institutions in the world. I had sold that business a number of years ago and then got into the space of integrative psychology. In 2002, started something called the Integrative Psychology Institute, which has grown to become one of the larger professional trainings in modern integrative psychology. And at the end of last year, we decided that we wanted to offer a master's degree in integrative psychology. And eventually to prepare the students that go through our programs for a licensure in counseling and or therapy. The mission of our organization is to make psychology education more affordable and accessible. And there's a number of ways that we do that, and I'm happy to elaborate more on the specifics of that. But yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Okay, great. So We received all your materials, and there's a few questions. I have a few questions. I think there's some staff members that also have questions. So forgive me. I didn't understand the relationship with Common Institute and Common University. I understand you have integrative psychology, which is funding some seed money for Common Institute, but I got lost where Common Institute becomes Common University and where that attachment was.
Yeah. To be honest, so we originally registered the LLC as Common University. Jacqueline let us know that we're not allowed to use that term university in our marketing materials until we have accreditation. And so the Common Institute is the same entity. We're just not using the Common University, that LLC name, in any of our marketing materials so as not to mislead any of our students.
Okay, great. Thanks for clarifying that. And the mission's applaudable. I think, you know, more natural integration of natural and physical sciences is great. But, you know, you are an initial applicant, so there will be some other questions here. One of the questions I had, you have a pretty significant growth plan projected. I think you're basically four times in your revenue, just under four times in a year, which is pretty large. How are you confident that you can do that? Like, I'm just wondering where are you drawing your market analysis from to get that range?
Yeah, really good question. Primarily, we rely on the Google search data, because there are a lot of people that just are searching now on Google for this degree, and we use that and what of our current conversion rates we project that we can assess. You know, my philosophy of projections is to try to keep them as grounded in reality as possible. And that is something that I do realistically feel that we can achieve. Also acknowledging that, we won't be able to create like truly, truly accurate projections until we go, I think, through our first 6 months. So I'd be happy to update the board with much more specific projections after our first 6 months. But I just want to reiterate, like, I genuinely do feel that's not just a number we're throwing out. I genuinely feel like, given our data driven approach to marketing and student acquisition, that we will be able to achieve that.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious. I mean, it's a lofty goal. It's a great goal if you make it right. So, I noticed you do spend a lot on marketing. I think about 27% of your revenue you spend on marketing. So there were quite a few questions about the website. And so when we were directed to the website, it doesn't go to Common Institute. It goes to integrative psychology. And I think there are a number of specific questions that have standards behind them. And I think somebody on the staff can probably ask those questions more eloquently than I. So I'm going to punch the next set of questions.
Sure. Ms. Kelly, members of the board. So in the initial review, I found quite a few challenges. And I think that either Keith or myself, or we sent some information back out to you. And I do believe that you've taken that site down now. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. So what we're going to need to do is we need to have access to it. So that we can do another comprehensive review. There were, again, a number of questions, a number of issues that we had with the content. Once you provide that, we will go through that again, and I believe that would be a condition that we would place on the license if you were to get approved to move forward with your license today, that we would need that resolved in quick time, sometime, by the early next week, so that we can activate your license and you can start that process of recruiting. So, but yes, there were a number of issues. I will send you what my initial read was, but I think you probably made some changes since our conversation, early or late last week. So,
yeah, and just to be clear on that, knowing that we're not able to use that publicly, we're sort of unsure with what we do with that website and what is compliant. And Jacqueline told us that we cannot have that as a public facing site. So yeah, we did remove that. And that was, what we have put on that so far was sort of a rough outline of the programs. There was not, it was really just to sort of demonstrate the high level of how we were presenting to the students. And yeah, super happy to make updates on that and get the specific like program information that aligns with all of the exact details of the application on there. So yeah, we're happy to get that by, can get that by Monday.
Great, perfect, thank you.
Okay, all right. I wasn't clear on that, so I apologize. I went to the integrative psychology site, and I guess there had been a link for Common Institute that you took down, because you still have the integrative psychology site up and running, right?
Yeah, because we're going to, our plan is to use the integrative psychology as a DBA of Common, we'll need some guidance on what we need to put on both websites just to make that relationship clear. What I had assumed from Jacqueline is that it just needs to be clear that there is a relationship and that the degree that they're receiving is from the Common Institute. Is that more or less correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Again, anytime that you have multiple websites, you have to look at it from the student perspective of who's my school, right? That's the answer at the end of the day is what school am I attending and,
right.
And what website do I look at to get the most relevant information to my degree program?
Right.
And that's the confusing part. So we will certainly work with you through that over the next week or so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks, Mr. Lamont. If I was confused, I figure a student's probably confused too. So, okay. And then, for clarification on the financials, there were just a couple of questions and I'm not sure. I think perhaps they were answered, but one of the questions was, in March, you had a significant, uptick in your revenue. It was $250K and a small part of that was seed money. And there was still a question of where was the larger amount coming from? And I think that probably is still out there. I did not see that answered anywhere. So
as we now transition the organization under this legal entity, like that revenue was coming from our professional trainings, and that is the funding that we're using to fund this. So I've just been kind of taking guidance on how we treat that. But yeah, that was from us selling professional trainings.
Sure, great. And look, you're initial applicants of this process. You can't work with a better group than Mr. Lamountain and his staff. So I'm sure you found them very useful and helpful. A lot of this has been getting rectified along the way. So
totally. We've been, like, you guys have been unbelievably responsive and helpful.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Ms. Kelly, can I follow up on
go ahead.
One question and then I'll get back to you, turn it back to you. On Mr. Carney, on your income statement, you have Common P&L 2024, so quarter four, tuition fees $66,000. And then it says quarter one 2024, I assume that's quarter one 2025 at $313,000. Is that what you were referring to, Ms. Kelly, also?
It might have been a mislabel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't like going back a year ago. So,
yeah.
And so does that reflect a jump in professional training courses or just that they were both, they were segregated and now you're combining them?
Yeah, no, we've had incredible growth in the professional training. So yeah, that was a jump in growth on the professional training in quarter 2025.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Mittman. I don't really have any other questions. I want to open it up to the other colleagues out there that may have some.
I have just a couple. Mr. Carney, I'm trying to appreciate, in review, it looks like you have pretty good background. The team has pretty good background in regards to kind of the curriculum and the elements associated with it. But in regards to the actual accreditation process and going through that, can you share with me who really is your point person in regards to taking the lead on that and what maybe their backgrounds are that really qualify them to be able to ensure compliance from that side of it?
Yeah. Really good question. And so when we began this process, to be totally frank, like we were very naive about what that process involved. And I had Jacqueline actually, I believe it was Jacqueline, introduced me to a few people in Arizona just to kind of help us understand the process. So this was back in, I think, December or January. And one of the things that really stuck with me back in that conversation was that we need to build a culture of compliance. You know, it's not going to be this rushing to, you know, meet the accreditation requirements before the reviews. Is that compliance needs to be built into our culture. And we took that really sincerely. So two of our team members, myself included, went to the HLC annual conference this year just to immerse ourselves in that culture and environment and understand how they think. There we met multiple university presidents that also run psychology universities, and we've just taken it extremely seriously. I see that as the president and CEO as a core component of my role to set a container for the organization where we are compliant. We do have someone who is on our team, Mason Palmer, who's kind of led our more like hands-on accreditation, but I personally see that as my responsibility to lead the process of us getting accredited. And we are, after our extensive just review of the processes and what serves our students, we are going to begin the accreditation process with the DEAC. We were originally going to go get accreditation with the HLC. We learned now that essentially what shifted, as I'm sure you know, is that there's no longer really a regional accreditation. It's just all national accreditation. And so the limitations, the previous limitations of the DEAC are no longer relevant. And so their process just seems to work best for us.
Thank you for that. How dependent are you upon receiving accreditation for your school to be successful?
Yeah. When we receive, I'm very familiar with there was an unaccredited master's degree program in integrative psychology in Santa Monica that was extraordinarily successful. The where it really comes into play for us is that in order for the degree to then prepare our students for counseling licensure, that degree has to come from an accredited institution. So in our first year and a half, we have to be extremely transparent with our students to let them know that this is not a degree that is leading you to licensure. Now it's we feel that we know that there still is a market for that because actually in the realm of what we do in integrative psychology, there is not a licensing board for integrative and somatic psychology. There's only a licensing board for conventional counseling. So it's not really common for people who do more holistic psychology to go the path of licensure anyway. And so we feel really confident that we're going to be able to enroll students in a degree that is not intended to prepare for licensure. Once we do get the accreditation, we will experience a lot of growth because then we will also be able to have a degree component that does prepare them for licensure.
Thank you.
Can I follow up on this one question and turn it back? Is that right?
Yeah.
So the Master of Science in Integrative Psychology, accredited or non-accredited, Would a graduate be able to sit for licensure in any states?
With the current degree, no. But what we have designed is that we're actually going to set it up. This is like really getting into the weeds now. The requirements of a master's degree that sits for licensure, and I can share this document.
I mean, that's okay. I just wanted to, because I was just following the thread that Mr. Romano was pulling at also, which is, you know, does this degree, whether it's pre-accreditation or post-accreditation, you know, would someone be eligible for it? And then if you're accredited, then obviously you could add other degree programs, but it may take you out of the field of integrative psychology.
Yeah. So this initial degree that we submitted will not prepare students for licensure. After our students complete that degree, we're going to add an additional degree on top of that with those two degrees combined. The second one will be a little bit shorter, and it will be designed to meet the requirements in 48 of the 50 states.
And that would be the degree?
It would be that degree would be a degree in counseling.
Okay.
And I think it's important to acknowledge here that also, like, I think the majority of psychology degree enrollment is for in master's programs are not designed to prepare for licensure. There are general degrees in behavioral health or, you know, business in psychology. There are a number of psychology degrees that are unaccredited or not designed to prepare you for licensure. There was a new federal regulation passed that just enacted in January of this year that says that as an institution, we just need to clearly disclose that to our students, and they actually have to sign an agreement that says, I acknowledge that this degree is not preparing me for licensure.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Sorry. Back to you, Mr. Ramones.
Yeah, I think where I'm trying to go and just being very transparent is it feels like your desire is to get to the accreditation area, but there's not necessarily a certain level of expertise within your company right now or your school right now that really prepares you for that. This is a serious road that you're on, and learning as you go may come at the cost of a lot of students going through your program through that process. I'm not questioning your commitment level to wanting to do that. It just creates pause for me because of what is necessary. Some of us have climbed Everest in that way in the past and can appreciate you will lose people along the way. It's a very very challenging road for that. But while you're doing that, metaphorically speaking again, or analogous wise, you're taking students along the journey with you, right? And yeah. Although they are acknowledging the fact that they understand you are not in a position to get them that licensure piece of it, or that they can even sit for that piece of it, there is probably still some level of optimism that you will get them to that point. And you're learning as you go may, that's what creates a little pause for me, just being very transparent. I was hoping you might say you were engaging with third parties on it for consultant support, as you work through that. Not that there's necessarily a right answer, but it just, as I'm digesting this, I'm trying to really find my balance in saying, making sure we're doing right by the institution, making sure we're doing right by you, making sure we're doing right by the students, that you're far enough along in your pathway right now that we have a high level of confidence that that you'll be able to serve as intended versus 6 months from now potentially, you know, fall out because you now have realizations of maybe what really will be needed to accomplish your ultimate goal. So I'll pause there. That's not really a question. I'm just, again, being transparent with you of what I'm trying to balance in my consideration for you and the approval today versus is there potentially more work that you could do to prepare yourself and put yourself in a better position to come back in front of the board to be reconsidered at that point in time. That's what I'm trying to balance.
Absolutely, and absolutely, we are engaging with consultants in this process. I didn't mention that because I think that, you know, everything in the organization, in our culture, is created by the top, and you know, we're getting our directors. I honestly feel as knowledgeable about that accreditation process in the realm of psychology as anyone that I've spoken to, including other university presidents. And yes, part of that has been engaging with consultants. And the other part, we have been in discussions with another university to like do some sort of arrangement. This would be with the HLC to get branched underneath them, and so that we would get bought into their accreditation process and also be able to take student loans. Also, this will be the a role of somebody with experience going through like a very, very experienced university executive, that will be one of the next hires as soon as we start enrolling students for this. So while I acknowledge that we are new to that process, it was a huge burden to understand how to navigate in this, to get to a point where we can be very clear with our students who are enrolling. And at this point, I do feel that we are able to be extremely clear and extremely transparent with our students. That took a lot of navigating the labyrinth of accreditation and licensure to get to. And I feel really confident that we've landed on that. And we will, as we grow, make really key hires. That is like a number one key hire that we will likely bring on another someone who was previously a university president or, you know, an ALO from the HLC who has a lot of, you know, lived experience in that as well.
Certainly what you're suggesting makes sense. Those are a lot of future actions that may or may not take place after we've provided a license from that. So we have to have a certain understanding of that. And I'll reflect back to one of your earlier statements in our discussion here, which was your unsureness of what can or cannot be on the website to make sure that you are compliant. I just want to reiterate, so there's no misunderstanding, although our board staff is an excellent resource, they are not your compliance department, meaning if you miss and you launch and you miscommunicate or fall out of what the standards are, it's not the burden of what the board staff may or may not have told you or done. That is 100% your accountability and responsibility in taking this license and ultimately operating in the state of Arizona. So I share that with you because although it seems as though you have good intentions for the future of securing people with that working knowledge, you admittedly are still somewhat ignorant to what is necessary and the requirements to make sure that you are presenting authentically and accurately within what the expectations of accreditation would be for this. It's not, again, not really a question. I'm just trying to create some of that discussion for the board as we consider, are you ready now? Or should we be thinking about maybe another step in the process versus potentially not suggesting, and this is not a motion, some type of stipulation that says, hey, let us see your website and then we'll grant that licensure. There may be more to it, but that may be enough. So I'll leave it.
Absolutely. And I just want to be clear, like the issue with the website, I feel like we are asking questions about what we present or what's needed for the application. And we were somewhat unclear on, do we make a live website? I had asked the board, do we put it behind a password protected to, you know, and we just weren't given a clear response on that. And I also understand that that you guys are not the regulating board going forward, that that's really our responsibility with the accreditor. And so going to the HLC conference, and I have a direct line of communication with the vice president of new accreditations for the HLC. And what I understand is that it's a conversation with them. And so what I ask for is regular communication, check-ins with them. And so, you know, we're very committed to that process. And so while I understand that it is a lot of work, I think because we have so much bought into the necessity of that and the willingness to be very open and communicative with the accreditor, it honestly, it's not something that feels even remotely like challenging or, I don't want to say it's not challenging. It's just, I feel very, very equipped for that process at this point.
I appreciate that. Mr. Lamont, you have your hand up.
And just to be clear, Adam, that we are the regulatory group that, you know, you talked about having a culture of compliance. We are your main source of regulatory control and review. Eventually, you will have an accreditor who will have a secondary component to that or part to that. And potentially down the road, if you go and do Title IV, that you would have also the Department of Education. So just be clear, when you're building your culture of compliance, this group that you see right here, the staff and the board, are the main group that regulates your entity. So that communication has to be critical. And then the other piece to this is, just from, you know, I don't know where you're going with accreditation now. So you talked about HLC, and I'm glad you went there. Good people. I go to their annual conference every year and spend time with the regulator there. And then you talk about DEAC, which is another. So I know at this point, you said that you were going in one direction with DEAC, but a lot of what you've talked about is HLC. And, you know, I'm not your consultant. You got to figure those pieces out, but they are very different paths to accreditation, depending upon which direction that you choose to go. And additional, as Mr. Romano was talking about, for licensure, for potential licensure for the profession that you're educating in, I can't tell you which direction to go. It's something you've got to figure out, but you need to really build all of those pieces into either of the accreditors or any of the accreditors that you choose to move forward with. But I just wanted to make that point. So thank you.
Yeah. To be clear, we are pursuing the DAC. I think I only make reference to the HLC because I believe that they have a more stringent accreditation process. And so we've sort of set our expectations at that. And the DAC, as I understand it, is a little bit less, they're not quite as strict for that. So I think they would
disagree with you, but that's up to you to, again, it's your choice to pick what you want to look for accreditor. Just make sure that as you're going through that process, that you're reviewing, will this potentially lead to the individual's ability to get licensed and use their degree as a profession, to get their career moving. So.
Yeah. But just to be clear, in our process with you guys, like, we are officially going to enter the DEAC accreditation process.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
If I could piggyback real quick, I think one of the ways to fix this for right now, and it's not a permanent solution, obviously, but if your students are signing, I didn't see anything in your enrollment materials that they sign something that says they understand this will not lead to licensure. I think that would protect you. It would protect them. And it obviously you want to get licensure and you might, but in the interim, I think that would be, it's just a suggestion, but I think that might be a nice gap stop there for you.
Yeah. I'm going to put in the chat here. This is the report that we've run on the licensure prep. And then we're happy to provide the actual document that they will sign to acknowledge that this initial degree does not prepare them for licensure.
And Ms. Kelly and Mr. Carney, Ms. Kelly, you could put that into a stipulation for approval, that requirement is there and it's approved by staff, whatever their language that they're going to use. I think that's the right approach to take. We have that happen numerous times with other institutions that put a warning label on the program.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for that. And I appreciate Mr. Romano for bringing up the concern, because it's an obvious concern.
Yeah.
Mr. Romano, did you have anything else?
No, I do not.
Can I follow up on what Mr. Romano was saying? I think he was highlighting the difference between what you've described as a very successful launch of certificate programs, which do not require licensure, does not require accreditation. And I don't know, Ms. Roman, I'm not sure that it requires licensure with the state if you're providing essentially, you know, a form of continuing education. On the other hand, once you enter into this, into this realm, you have a number of things to be aware of. So first of all, as a college president, I would recommend, as myself, I would recommend that you not hire a college president if it comes to compliance or regulatory or dealing with those things. Maybe a campus director here in Arizona. It could be a provost. It could be somebody I wouldn't hire. I'm retiring, so I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Consider me. But somebody with that level of experience and oversight, in that. If you are online, which you, I think the program is hybrid, but a good portion of it is online, you will have to be either licensed in other states to do that, or you will have to be approved by the state authorization reciprocity agreement, or SARA.
Thank you, SARA. Yep.
So to be approved by SARA, you're going to have to be licensed. You're going to have to be accredited, and you also, I'm not sure what else. And if you are offering a degree program, that you'll have to look into this, but if it's not eligible for licensure in a particular state, then, you know, that could be a consideration also. There may be states that you can't recruit from. And so I guess I'm kind of highlighting something that, it's like the distinction between what you're doing, which is great in and of itself, you know, but the market that you're tapping into so far is practitioners, you know, health coaches, you know, all kinds of, people who are doing good work, but they don't need a master's degree to be able to add whatever knowledge and experience and services, you know, to their existing client or patient base. Does that make sense? And so it's interesting because the difference between the market for certificates and the market for a master's degree, which is more expensive and you know, just a bigger investment. I would take a close look at that. But, and then the other thing, and I'm speaking, I know that, and I'll just say in full disclosure that at Sonoran University of Health Sciences, we have a master's in clinical mental health counseling, that is eligible for licensure. I'm not sure if it's in every state, but, you know, that's the master's level entry program. It's very prescriptive. There's not a lot of, and trust me, you know, I'm very well versed in the field of integrative healthcare. But they're very prescriptive about the program itself. And so, you know, keep that in mind. If that's the degree that you're going to be offering, and I'm saying this not to dissuade you from, you know, from migrating away from what looks like a very successful enterprise right now. But, you know, I would just fully appreciate the additional investment, because you're not only do you have a good top line, but you have a really good bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, if you're hiring, someone with experience in the area that Mr. Romano was talking about, you know, you're talking six-figure salaries, more than one six-figure salary. And so it's, you know, I would just be, you know, go in eyes wide open, and, you know, everyone talks about how good the board staff is, and they usually don't really talk about us as much. But the other thing about the board is that the board staff and the board also are real sticklers. And so, you know, if you attend on a regular basis, you'll see that schools do get fined, and schools, you know, that run into problems, you know, cause it's, you know, our job is to protect the students and then also the reputation of our state. And so, and with that, my sermon is over. We can all, congregation can be seated, and I'll turn it back over to, Ms. Kelly and Mr. Romano.
Yeah. If I could just quickly comment on that. First of all, thank you. I think that's like just wise to, you know, as I said in the beginning, we were naive about that and the last 6 months, and understanding what you were referring to as like the intricacies of of the interstate. Like, we've already begun the process of registering as a foreign entity in the states that we are going to operate, focusing on California, and I think we have a list of like five other states that we're gonna that we've begun with already. We've been in contact with the NCSERA people. It's disappointing that we can't do that until accreditation. That's what it is. And then in terms of the state-by-state prescriptive requirements to meet licensure, it seems so most of them have designed around CAKE-REP, which is the programmatic accreditor in the counseling space. Mm-hmm. 48 of 50 states now accept CAKE-REP equivalents. And so we've designed, when we do launch the counseling right. degree, I could list to you the specific prescriptive requirements that you referred to.
For sure. I mean, you'll just have to determine whether from a competitive advantage standpoint, because once, you know, you're in a field of which, you know, just looking at, you know, searching for other schools or programs like you offer, there aren't that many. Once you get into clinical mental health counseling, then it's a crowded field. And probably one of the biggest schools is Grand Canyon University, with over 500 students already enrolled in the program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, CAKE-REP or no CAKE-REP, that's up to you. But that's one of the things that prospective students will look at. All right. Well, I'm going to turn it back over, because I don't want to monopolize time. And I think you've gotten plenty of sage advice from
thank you, guys.
So is there any other comments or questions? Okay. Thank you for all the input. You did get very sage advice. I am going to recommend that we approve the conditional non-accrediting degree granting license. Actually, I forgot to ask you, Adam, are you willing to maintain the $15,000 bond?
Absolutely.
Okay. So let me go back to my approval again. I will approve the condition. I recommend we approve the conditional non-accredited degree granting license that you will maintain based on you maintaining your $15,000 bond. You will also need to provide updates to the website to comply with Arizona rules and statutes. As Kevin mentioned, as Mr. LaMountain mentioned, he will provide you with those details. I'm also going to throw in here that you get a disclosure, a signed disclosure from potential students acknowledging that they know this will not lead to licensure right now.
Yes.
And Ms. Kelly, just for clarity, that those are stipulations that you're applying, so they have to be completed prior to the licensure being awarded. Is that correct?
Yes. Thank you for the reminder. Yes.
So is that we'll just say that's an amended motion on your part?
That's an amended motion.
Very good. With that, do we have there's a motion on the table. Do we have a second?
I'll second it. Ms. Dubb.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ball. We appreciate that. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Mr. LaMountain, if you would take call.
Mr. Romano. Mr. Romano?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm still processing. Quite respectfully, I will vote affirmative. Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. The vote of four ayes, no nays, that motion will pass.
Very good. Ms. Carney, as we've discussed, right, we want you to be successful. We want the students to be successful. Obviously, there are stipulations associated with this that you will need to first complete prior to securing that licensure. But assuming we can move through those pieces of it and your continued path forward, we should be in a great place from that. So we wish you the best of luck, and please continue to work with our board staff.
Thank you so much. And just a quick question. So, Mary, will it be you that I work with to submit the two additional outstanding items?
No, from this point, it will be staff. So it will be either Jacqueline or myself. You'll receive a letter from me stating what the requirements are going to be. You'll get that probably by the tomorrow, sometime tomorrow.
Okay, and we should have those materials ready by Monday.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank
you. The less time you have with the board is better.
Yeah.
The more time you have with the staff is positive. So we'll leave it at that. But thank you again for your time, and we appreciate your preparation of the materials, and we look forward to hearing the great news from our board staff that you have met the stipulation requirements.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Have a good luck, Adam.
All right. Normally, we don't go quite that far in with our schools, but Ms. Kelly, you won the luck of the draw on that one. We'll move to our third school, College of Science and Education, which, Dr. Mittman, you are lead on.
Was that a challenge, Mr. Romano?
I think you can beat the
competition between Mary and me. Okay, so let's go. All right, welcome.
I'm sorry, this is Jean Gelman. Did we lose quorum?
We did not yet. We still have four.
Okay, I see Mr. Ball has left the room now.
Oh, yeah. We have to wait until he returns. You're correct. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad those guys left. We could do like a mindfulness exercise. Take deep breaths in. Well,
he had his headset.
There he is. Mr. Ball is back. All right. So we have four.
Plausible he was at least hearing us, although not in the room. So we are officially back in quorum. Thank you very much, Assistant. Okay.
Next up, College of Science and Education. And I see we have representatives from the school. Do you guys want to give us an opening statement?
Sure. We have been in business as a charter school since 2000 with the philosophy of experiential hands-on learning, and are at the point where we are ready to expand into the college realm with our new mission for the college to be a private post-secondary college with Christian-based philosophy, still and extending the hands-on experiential methodologies by immersion into God's natural world. We have found that over the years, we have literally here in Levine been dealing with a low-income population, typically 63% to 71%. And with that and the philosophy that I've carried through with the hands-on experiential learning, we have had pretty good success with helping our students fill those gaps that come from a poverty environment. And we've had many, many of our students, it's a K-12 school, graduate and get full ride scholarships to major universities and be successful over the years. But recently we have noticed that there's been a change in our society with the onslaught of technology. Students are becoming less interested in going to school further than high school. They are doing a lot of home time screen usage. They're disconnecting from the natural world, and we have less and less students that are college bound. We also found that in that realm, our families are, these are all first generation students going into college, and a lot of our families do not have that support system in place for them to explain, you know, you have to sit down and study, you have to, you know, read your material, you have to prepare, you can't just go to school and expect that you're going to pass. So we've seen a change recently in the past couple of years where these students are, we're preparing them to go off to college, they're starting college, and then all of a sudden we find out they have dropped out. And these are students that are really bright, they're leaders, they've attended all kinds of service learning, have been great, should not be dropping out of school. So we've come to the conclusion a lot of it is the lack of support at home, and we feel that if we extend our new endeavor into the college realm, we can offer to some of those students to have some college credit that they could take while they're a senior or junior in high school, which will segue them into the college environment and have them get that confidence under their belt, and that we can still provide that support system for them as they move into that. The opportunities that we've offered to the students with expanding their environment outside of this little community, taking them into the rainforest of Costa Rica, taking them to Belize to climb Mayan ruins and snorkel with in the greatest, you know, largest barrier reef in the world except for Australia. Immersing them in real life learning has been the success that we've seen. And we want to be able to extend that into college, the college realm. We've had many, many college students say, I wish we could go to school where we have those opportunities and be an in-person college where they're personally interacting rather than just being on a computer. Because that was the other complaint we got from our students that had left college, was that they were bored, they didn't want to be on a computer, they missed the interaction with the professor, their teachers. So that was a big reason that, you know, we want to serve this piece of our community that has that void. And we've also created over the years a lot of properties with these opportunities for students to learn in a hands-on environment. We want to be able to utilize those much, much more year-round with college students there, possibly doing research into a lot of the biological aspects and, you know, getting them, giving people that really need the more personal interaction with other peers and their teachers that opportunity to learn that way rather than just online. And lastly, filling a niche, because we're focusing on working adults who work during the day and will be going to school at night, much like one of the other universities here in Arizona. We've had several of our teachers go through their program where they worked in an 8-week program, finished one course, felt like they could afford that, try not to get student loans, and work towards getting their degree. It did take them many years, but they did complete their degrees and now are certified teachers and teaching for us. And that was very successful for them. And we felt like that was another niche for this area and for people who want to continue to work and be able to go to school at night. So with all of this and all of the things we have on our campus with our barnyard, our aquarium, all of these things we've created over the last 25 years, we have everything in place. And now I have professors hired, so all we need to do is get students. So that's kind of our opening statement of where we're at and some of our things we're trying to accomplish and help with our community involvement.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Romano, Mr. The Mountain, I don't have a conflict of interest, but should I declare an implicit bias? Sorry, Mr. Berg, I see you're a herpetologist, and that is like my biggest phobia. And so hopefully, you know, that will enter into the conversation here. All right. Well, thanks for sharing.
No worries. So, everyone has their comfort level, so.
So thanks for sharing that. And so you have been running the Country Gardens Charter School for decades now. I noticed in the organizational chart that you provided that several of the people, yourselves included, are currently employed at Country Gardens. Will you be continuing to do both, serve in both roles?
Yes, I this year was able to move one of our assistant principals full-time into principal role to take that burden off of me in preparation going forward with the college. And that has helped immensely. I've been putting some other people into some of my roles.
Is that Bobby Jones?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So Bobby Jones is also the Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and is also the Title IX officer, correct?
Yeah.
In the college. So you may have shifted, let me ask it a different way. What percentage of people who would work at the college of Science and Education also will continue to work, the administrators will also continue to work at Country Gardens?
Probably all of them, because okay. It's highly integrated with the campus, and we have a lot of, we have five different assistant principals that can also back him up. And
I get it. I just wanted to be clear, because you know, another question I had is that you have a K through 12 program, and now there's adult learning, anybody over 18 being an adult. But I believe you were saying that those people are going to be there taking courses at night, correct?
Yes.
So
yes.
They're not going to be there during the day. There's no day courses. There's no school.
No, it's set up on five nights a week with eight week semesters.
Okay. And the you're applying for licensure for 50 programs. Is that correct?
Well, it's actually more than that, because I had to line out what you were just talking about with the last gentleman, the fact that some of our programs will be leading to licensure and some of them will be not.
Okay.
So originally in the catalog, I had them where I just stated, if you drop off the internship for student teaching, then you would not be licensed. But a lot of teachers that are already licensed go back to get their master's in either that area or a different area, but they don't need to student teach again. So they will want
to
pay.
To say that you're going to have, I'll reframe it. Am I correct that you'll have at least 50 degree programs?
Well, yes, but they're really based on three major areas with just variations on a theme.
Right. Well, there are three either schools within the college, or there are three departments within the college. But
correct.
within those, let's call them departments, you're offering, you know, upwards of 50 degrees.
Correct.
Right. Okay. All right. Who among the administrators listed in the org chart, and I'm sorry, I'm going like this because Mr. LaMountain, the org chart is, I couldn't rotate it, and so I have to rotate my head like this. So who among, you know, the people here, and this kind of gets to the conversation that Mr. Romano was having with the previous school, who among the people in the administration have higher education experience, not attending higher ed, but having worked either as deans, as vice presidents, as let's start with that, or directors of operation, et cetera?
At a college level, none.
Okay.
All have been at the charter school level.
Understood. And really, you know, when I read your proposal, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get another degree. except for the snakes. Sorry about that. Costa Rica, but not for the what is it, Fleur de Lance?
We have lots of monkeys and toucans and scarlet macaws.
Right.
Lots of furry
monkeys and the toucans I'm good with. So I guess that, you know, so really the question is, how are you going to fulfill not just like the, you know, the accreditation requirements? I know you're applying through tax. But how are you going to meet the needs that are very different? You know, I mean, you know, as you would imagine, you know, very different from adults versus, you know, K through 12. How many students are enrolled at Country Gardens right now?
Right now, about 280.
Okay. And so do you feel that, you know, whether it's accreditation, or if you're pursuing accreditation, I imagine that you'll be looking for federal financial aid, so complying with the Department of Education, dealing with you know, the kind of issues that, you know, that college students deal with, because they're not under parental, you know, supervision anymore. And so they have like life issues. They have different interpersonal issues. And I know that you have like at the charter school, you have student mediation, which is very laudable, but how do you propose to address those needs?
Well, that was one of the other reasons that we really wanted to be a Christian-based institution, because it does allow us to have stricter, what I call, conduct regulations. It's listed in our student handbook.
For a second, Grand Canyon University is a Christian university.
Yes.
And that doesn't, they have, the same, no, I shouldn't say the same. They have, you know, values and core values and principles that they adhere to. That said, having people with experience in higher ed is still part of the university. And so, I guess my question is, are you planning to bring on other administrators, similar to the conversation that we had with the previous school, for people, you know, to bring people into the college who have working experience at a post-secondary level?
Yes, many of the faculty that we have hired have taught, and I myself taught at ASU,
right.
and are in the process of.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking like the dean of students, for example. You know, I know that Ms. Jones, you know, has been principal, you know, here, and has, you know, an extensive background. But are you planning to bring in people who have working experience at administrative level, not instruction, not as a faculty member or an adjunct faculty member? Are you planning to bring anyone in at that level as part of your plan in the next year or two as you pursue accreditation?
Yeah, we're looking at that, because there's right now it is a financial issue, as far as we don't know how many students we're going to, you know, get. And so we, you know, planning this out with an adjunct faculty at the point where we start looking at folks, where what would be their administrative skills, what's their experience in that area. But, you know, that comes with a higher dollar amount to hire someone like that. So at some point we're hoping to, yes, be at that point. But the other thing is, we want people that believe in our philosophy of the hands-on experiential learning in the natural world, because as I've gone through before, and I was a pioneer in this at the college level, both when I was getting my master's at University of Tennessee in Chattanooga, they actually came into my classroom from the colleges and were videoing stuff I was doing. So
yeah, there was a lot of, it was really great that you shared quite a bit of that in the narrative. The financial statements that you shared with us, you and Mr. Am I saying it right? Berg or Burge?
Burge.
Burge. Okay. Easy. You and Mr. Burge started the college, incorporated the college with $15,000. Have you developed a pro forma, you know, just kind of mapping out, like, you know, because $15,000 is great for now because you haven't incurred any expenses. But,
correct,
you know, once you start, you know, even you know, in the marketing rollout that you talked about, you know, you're going to have to, you know, even the, you know, the sort of on the ground, you know, kind of, you know, lot of community marketing, it's going to get chewed up pretty quickly. So do you have a, have you developed like a pro forma showing how, you know, over the next 12 months or over the next couple of years, you know, how you're going to, are going to be able to run the school?
Yeah, I put that into the financial plan that I submitted and the rollout plan as well. We're really not expecting to have a huge number of students to start with. We're looking at a need for two students to pay the adjunct faculty with a little left over. If we can get three per class, that would be great. A lot of the marketing I'm starting with would be myself and family members, you know, doing a lot of the advertising, my husband and I infusing more cash into the program, if necessary, into the financials. And we're going to be utilizing a lot with social media.
And ask you a question, and maybe Ms. Lamont, you might want to jump in. Ms. Burge, you were referring to the pro forma. Is that the document that I have is financial summary, College of Education, and it's got, you know, it's written as a Word document with lots of bullets. It's got personal financial statements and narrative. It's got,
yeah, Dr. Mittman, just to confirm, that is a document that we created to summarize what we have received.
Okay. But do we have, Mr. Roman, do we have like a, you know, usually we have a, and Ms. Rome, you can answer it too. We usually have like a, we require like a spreadsheet that kind of lists out the anticipated revenue and expenses.
Ms. Rome?
Yes, Dr. Mittman, members of the board. So the Burges did provide the rollout plan. If you look on the spreadsheet, the last link, that number 25, program rollout plan, there are three documents in there, and that's kind of how they summarize how they're going to fund and roll out their programs.
Okay, great. I have it here. Thank you. So I'm looking at, I've got the calendar, hold on. Got the.
If you look at the College of Science and Education rollout plan, I think for me, it's the first one, but it probably depends on how you have it organized in your Google Drive.
Yeah, I'm looking at it as a, maybe it's talked
about. So on the first one.
Is it a 5-page PDF?
Yeah.
It is a 5-page PDF, and it's on page 2, the enrollment and financial projections.
Right. Yeah. Okay, good. Good. I'm glad that I wasn't, we have all these teachers and principals here. I didn't want to get sent to the principal for not reading the materials. What I'm looking for is an actual spreadsheet that has a little bit more detail of the revenue and expenses. And so that's fine. I mean, that could be something different, but I appreciate what you've got here at this level. Can you tell me how many of the faculty, give me a number, how many of the faculty, who I assume for the most part will be adjunct faculty, are currently teaching at colleges or universities, or in other words, at a post-secondary level? Because I see a lot of people, you know, are already instructors at Country Gardens.
Well, we have several that were teaching. I know one is working on her doctorate right now and still teaching at a couple universities as adjunct. We have several that I've hired that have master's degrees and have either taught some courses but are not a full-time faculty. Right. We also have a.
You want me to know a number? How many?
Oh, a number?
Yeah.
Probably out of the 17, probably half at least have taught at the college level.
Okay.
And we still have a lot that we have left. I mean, I've got like 250 applicants wanting to come on board, but these were the ones we met with and narrowed down to get started with
in all
the different areas that we would need to you know, initiate and not get too many. The other thing is just making sure that they're following our vision.
Okay. If you had to pick two degrees to offer, that like, you know, either it's a combination of the ones that you feel like the most, you know, strongly about and or have like the greatest expertise, like it could be in herpetology. But what would those be?
Well, the two major areas are the science, the biology degrees, and the education degrees. Because the way I structured the programs was I did a lot of research. And so for the biology, the 14 biology degrees, let's say in the BA level and also in the master's level, there is a basic of 18 courses that are all pretty much the same. And then when you go
my question is like of those various programs, let's say within the biology department, what is the one that you have like the most expertise or the one that's kind of nearest and dearest to your heart?
They all are. I mean, they're all integrated in everything we do. Probably the basic biology one would be one of the main ones.
Okay. Yeah, that could draw from all of them.
Correct.
All right, and what about in education?
Pretty much same thing, the elementary and the secondary, which is your basic education degrees. SPED and ESL and reading are all offshoots of that with just a few variances in courses.
Great, thank you. All right, are there other questions from other board members? I want to be mindful of the time hogging the clock here.
Other questions? I think certainly, Dr. Mittman, you had hit on a number of these pieces of it. I imagine the school will probably be drawing from the K-12 for continued education, understandably. Metaphorically speaking, because of the ecological side of the education that you deliver, you're shepherds to people that you may have been with since they just started school all the way through college. And that's a major undertaking as well. So I just encourage you to keep that in mind as well as you progress forward.
Yes, we have had many students start here in kindergarten and graduate and now have gone on to become parents. And now they're bringing their children here.
Actually, we're on almost our third generation at this point.
It's very powerful. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Right. Other board members, Ms. Kelly, Mr. Ball.
No, I think you were very thorough, Dr. Mittman.
Thanks. Okay. All right. So as much as I am really inspired by your vision for the school and the commitment over, I don't know, almost 40 plus years in K-12, I have serious concerns about the ability to jump from a charter school, you know, K-12 into a college. Number one, into a college with 50 degree programs, even more so. And especially with the staff that is, you know, almost exclusively, there's no one, on your staff, especially from in the leadership role, that has any of the experience in higher education. And so what I'd like to do is I've got a list of five things that I'd like you to come back to the board with, right? And so you don't have to write these down. We'll staff will reach out to you with them. I'd like you to come back. I think our next board meeting is in August. My preference would be if we were to move forward with a conditional license? Is that the first?
This would be a conditional, correct.
Conditional license would be for two programs, which you probably could have guessed from the last question that I asked you. A pro forma that is, and we have a Excel spreadsheet form that you could use to fill that out. A more detailed financial resources, and again, staff can provide that for you and Mr. Burge also. A financial commitment, which is another document that staff can provide you, which is basically saying, you know, we're committed to fund the school, you know, because the $15,000, like we talked about, is going to disappear or go down quickly. I will ask you to please type out the resumes because it was very hard to see who's teaching what, who taught this, or who has degrees and that. It'll just make it easier for staff and for the board. Two-degree program. And that's it?
I guess I'm a little, I don't know, taken aback. We used the forms that we were given for the resumes, so I didn't know they needed to be typed. We had the
They don't need to. They don't need to, but it was like, you know, some of them, you know, you have people who are teaching 15 or 20 courses. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, you know, I mean, it's hard to read. So.
And when it comes to the financial commitment, we've been as a family and with a lot of our administrative staff, many of us, you know, have been integral to finding many different ways of funding for our school and for fundraising for all these various projects for well over 25 years. I mean, we're full bore into this. There's no question about that whatsoever. You know, $15,000, yeah, that's not a lot of money, but we get money for a lot of things every single day for different purposes.
Understood, yeah, for sure.
And the fact that we already own all these properties and most of them are free and clear, there isn't any mortgage on them except the main school, which is already...
Right, but you can't pay for anything with the
property. Right, the infrastructure is already here.
I mean, just...
I understand. I get what you're saying, and trust me, I appreciate, you know, I think you said you're taken aback, or if you feel frustrated, I get it. Mr. LaMountain?
Yeah, I just want to, just for point of clarification, we will provide, the staff will provide details about the information that Dr. Mittman is looking for. As it relates to that financial commitment, I think there's, I'll kind of spell out what you need to put together in terms of what your contributions are going to be. As mentioned, the $15,000 is not a lot of money to fund an institution for the first year, and that's all that we can go on. You can make a statement that says we'll pay more, but what we need, and I think what Dr. Mittman is looking for, is specific dollar value that you're going to put forward and commit to year one, two, three, and four. But all of that will be in a letter that I will send to you shortly after this meeting that will help you prepare for the next meeting. Ms. Calvin?
Okay.
A question, Dr. Mittman. I don't know if that was a motion. Are you proposing to grant them a conditional license
I'm proposing that they come back in August.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
There was a motion on the table, but at the same time, understanding these requests, which is not uncommon, by the way, Mr. and Ms. Burt, what we're trying to appreciate and understand is that you're as prepared as possible for starting 50 programs, right? And so I think that's why Dr. Mittman is recommending, hey, maybe crawl before we walk, walk before we run, type of a thing to put yourself in the best position. That said, there may be other decisions that you make to say we will staff up differently. We will do different things to put us in a better position to be able to operate 50 plus programs in a post-secondary type of environment. But in fairness too, based on the organizational structure that you provided, these people are essentially working in the morning with adults all throughout the evening, 5 days a week. You're at some point that may hit a breaking point that concerns us because of the duplication of duties or efforts or intensity and what that looks like to make sure that students are set up for success. And then, you know, ultimately even from your summer operating hours that you had, because you're not operating the school, you're offering those courses in the summer during the morning and the afternoon as well, based on the documentation that you provided. So full year round, 24/7 commitment by staff that's serving K through 12, as well as in these degree programs. And we want to make sure that that is also something that is structurally sound. So financially sound, staff-wise sound, and realistic in regards to maybe the number of programs is what we're trying to get a better picture of. And Dr. Mittman is really asking you to take this feedback, digest it, and then bring forward what you feel can be that best plan that can secure that approval. I think I'm paraphrasing Dr. Mittman, but I think that's what you were going for.
Can I offer an explanation too? Because
At this point, we're working on a motion right now. So I believe Mr. Romano or Dr. Mittman, are you going to?
Well, in this case, I don't think we're making a motion as much as saying nobody is willing to make a motion to approve to approve it and move forward with it. We are asking for more information. I don't believe that requires a motion. Basically, we're saying we're not going to make a motion to move this forward. But if staff feels that we do need to make a motion for those requested items, then I would turn it back over to Dr. Mittman to do so.
And Assistant Attorney General, Ms. Calvin, do you have a direction?
I might suggest that the motion be that you would table this application and instruct staff to communicate with the applicants and provide them with a list of the documentation and resources that Dr. Mittman had articulated.
Can I just say that that's my motion?
Sure.
Okay. So I move to exactly what Ms. Galvin stated.
Do we have a second on that motion? I will second.
I second.
Okay. Ms. Kelly. Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Appreciate that. Any further discussion by the board members? Okay. With that, Mr. Lamont, would you take roll?
Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. The vote of four ayes, no nays, then that motion will pass, and staff will provide you with guidance in a letter that spells out what we need to do to prepare for the August meeting.
Mr. and Mrs. Berger, I did just want to acknowledge we understand you've taken a lot of time in the preparation of these materials. You've been well thought out. We understand and respect that immensely. A no today is not a no forever. We're just trying to tighten it up to get it to that point that everybody feels comfortable moving forward. So our hope is that when Ms. Lamont circles back around with you, we'll be able to move through these and invite you back in and move forward successfully. So we appreciate your patience, your partnership, And we thank you for your preparation today, although it maybe didn't close out the way it had been desired to. So thank you.
Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
All right. We will move on to Trades Institute. And Mr. Ball, I believe you are our lead on that. Just a quick time check. We have about 11 minutes left with quorum. Unless, Ms. Kelly, you feel like you can give us maybe 5 minutes extra of your time. We want to be sensitive with that. So we will follow your lead, get it started. And if you need to exit, please just let us know.
I can give you five to 10 minutes.
Extra. Okay. Thank you for that. Mr. Ball?
Thank you. That's great. Let's see. Do we have a representative from the Institute available?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Would you like to make an opening comment and tell us about your school?
Yeah, absolutely. I have an opening statement here. I can read for you. Good morning / afternoon, everyone. I'm Logan Turley, co-founder and CEO of Trades Institute. Our chief marketing officer, Kevin Cornwell, is here as well. At Trades, we're focused on spearheading the American skilled trades renaissance, and we're starting right here in our home state of Arizona. Our mission is to elevate and educate people on these vital professions, making them respected, desirable, and a sound choice for people considering the ROI that's generated by their educational investment decisions. To achieve this, we've secured proven curriculum that exceeds WIOA standards in student completion and job placement. We deliver these courses online and self-paced, designed for the next generation of learners. We offer mobile-first materials, on-the-go podcast-style review courses, adaptive prep quizzes, and robust interactive simulations for skills training, and most importantly, for safety reinforcement. We also offer 24/7 student support across mediums based on the data we're seeing about our audience's late-night usage and engagement patterns. A cornerstone of our model is our integrated jobs and apprenticeships board. It actively analyzes real-time employer requirements to inform our curriculum choices. From day one, students are provided with a profile that's customized by their chosen career path with tips on how to find jobs. As the students progress and they achieve certifications, job recommendations and the pro tips they receive update accordingly, and it offers constructive feedback on all types of jobs they consider. This ensures they're preparing for and understanding of the current needs of employers throughout their journey with us and beyond. With that, I'm looking forward to the discussion on how Trades Institute can be a valuable asset to Arizona's workforce.
All right, thank you. Well, I think I just have, it looks like the staff's gone through your application and it looks very complete. I guess my question would be on subject matter like HVAC. How do you teach that online? I take it they don't actually work on any equipment or
sure. Yeah, like, I can speak to that. So as I mentioned, we sought out and I surveyed and tried 5 different of the best online programs in this field and went and found one that has worked with and has success metrics with the WIOA of working with folks in these in-demand fields and training them. This program that we use, I have a case study and have metrics. Over 400 students have graduated. Completion rate is 88%. And that's people in the WIOA, like 90% of them. So they're going for free. So they're still motivated to complete and a job placement rate of 91%. And so when we say job placement, that's apprenticeships too, right? And so that's what's unique and very cool about this field is there's a lot of apprenticeships that built in AZ. Program that, you know, Governor Hobbs really announced is $3 million going to 7 of these different companies to offer apprenticeships, which is really, you know, working training that this program has been proven online to prepare people for everything you need to know to go get an apprenticeship. A lot of these apprenticeships, they actually don't require experience. They say no experience required. When you talk to the companies, they like to see that you've been exposed to these environments. And so we have interactive simulations. It's equivalent to almost a video game where you're dropped into a situation. There's a faulty, you know, AC system and almost no guidance is provided. And what's most important there is safety. Things will beep and things will tell you if you haven't done a lockout material, you haven't done some of that stuff. So this is kind of being exposed to this situation in a safe way. And our big focus is you know, relationships with employers. So we can place you, and we have a jobs board where we're understanding of job requirements. First and foremost, they need our certifications from third parties that we provide, the EPA, OSHA, some of those to be legally required. But they want to see that people are professional, you know, they're dependable, and that they're going to be safe. That's the number one concern we hear, because something breaks, you know, you messed up something, that you get a call back, you have an upset customer. But if you do something that's not safe, that's the number one problem. You hurt yourself, you hurt a senior person that you're with. So we found a program that has been able to expose you to all the things you need to learn about HVAC and really get you to that point where you're going to go land an apprenticeship, or you're going to start working somewhere where they're going to train you. And we focused on safety to be hands-on.
What are the placement rates for your programs?
Well, so we're a new program, so this is our first time going through. We're not running students through yet, but we have a program that has been proven, and those are the metrics. I have the case study for it. We have the exact program we're following in HVAC and electrical, and it was HVAC, electrical, and plumbing were the key ones that we had that success rate there. And so we're using that, and we're adding things in addition to help people. We have a podcast, you know, review course, because we resell these certifications. So we have partnerships with OSHA and EPA, so they lean on us to do marketing and drive people to get their certifications. That's sort of a diversification of our revenue. And so we have completion rates of this exact program, you know, that we've been provided from our curriculum provider. But, you know, we're new here, so we haven't been able to send students through yet.
Right, right. All right, let me open it up to any other board members that have questions. Anybody else?
Looks like Ms. Kelly, you have a couple questions.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Turley. Appreciate all that input. Quick question for you. You said your placement rate includes people put into apprenticeships.
Yes.
So what is the percentage of that, and how do your programs, why would a student pay you to go, unless they're getting advanced standing in an apprenticeship, why would they pay for a program when they can walk right in off the street to go into an apprenticeship program at day one? So the question is, do you provide advanced standing in the apprenticeship program? And what's the percentage of your placement that are apprenticeships?
So we weren't given breakdowns of, okay, of the 91% that landed in jobs to meet the WIOA standards, which one of them were placed as entry-level jobs or which ones were apprenticeships. When we speak to local companies in the area, lots of HVAC companies and electrical, they're looking for good, dependable people. And there are, you know, no experience required. We have a jobs board that analyzes and presents jobs to people. So that is absolutely our goal. We're connecting with all of the companies that were granted the $3 million from Governor Hobbs and the Built in AZ apprenticeship program, that we have these direct relationships with people. So you have advanced standing. So like, and also unions. I think as you get deeper into this industry, we have a jobs board and we, you know, post about it, and everyone's always saying, go union, right? Or get an apprenticeship, go union. That's a very big thing in the community that we really promote as a great route for people. And unions want you to get an apprenticeship, and it's experience, you know, it prioritized essentially is how they describe it. So if you've gone through this program, you can communicate that you're safe. You know, you're focused on being professional, job ready. A lot of these things that'll come up in a job interview, not just that you, you know, had a, that's a key component. I've hired a lot of people before where it's not just the degree. It's how ready are you to be professional and be safe and work in the workforce. So we do not have that yet. We've been in a position where we're not fully marketing and talking about things to build these relationships, but we want to be able to say, at least we can say now without the relationship built, that you will have a leg up in terms of these apprenticeships. If you, you can show you're passionate about this program, you are safe, you've been exposed to HVAC, you're knowledgeable about all the stuff without actually having your hands on. We absolutely want to be able to provide those types of weekend workshops coming in our plan, but getting started here with online, maybe people can't make it to Phoenix area. They're further away, those types of things.
Yep. So totally understood. I see another hand up there. There are a number of us that are in this space that actually do a skilled on-site component. And we hear from employers all the time that they have gotten somebody who did something online, and when they get there, they can't do the skill set. So I caution you on that. It's a very big big advantage, right? To having some kind of, with these programs, especially plumbing and HVAC, it really is difficult to have a student be any better than anyone off the street. I mean, they can go take an OSHA class on their own without having to pay through a third party to do that. So, you know, I'm just throwing that out as a caution because we sit here and we're representing the best interests of our students. And, you know, we always want someone to be going through a program at a school that's putting them better off than if they hadn't gone through that. But I do see Mr. Romano raising his hand, so I'm going to let him chime in here as well.
Yeah, in addition, Ms. Kelly, to the points that you just made, which are all very appropriate and should be under consideration from that. Mr. Turley, you had mentioned WIOA a couple times now from that. It seems as though two things. One, how much does WIOA offer you for the program tuition per student?
It's between $8,000 to $10,000, depending on the situation, and we need to be licensed before we partner with the ETPL list. But that's really our focus, is working with those types of individuals with the Department of Economic Security.
Right. And so it also looks like right now, at least based on the website that you provided, which I don't believe is live right now, you've at least stated, although your tuition is $1,999, you've dropped it down to $999 for a limited period of time based on that. So some type of entry point. How dependent are you or do you feel you will be on the WIOA support?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, as I mentioned, we want to be able to make sure that we have a diversification of our revenue to not be solely dependent on the WIOA. We want that. I want that $999 even lower, because this is an exposure program for folks. There's 70 hours of courses. I think they're very valuable. I've taken them. I learn a lot. I'm much more knowledgeable about these fields and how to be safe around electricity and boxes and things. So there's a value for sure to taking these courses. We resell EPA 609, 608 OSHA, so they lean on us. We're really, lead gen and enrollment folks. We have that background and really experienced in marketing, so we can fully support ourselves from resell, just because these are courses almost 1 million people need to go get OSHAs every year. So we're a partner with them in terms of resell, and we really see it as people can come to us from three ways. Hey, I really want to get more trained in terms of, an online trade school program. I just need my cert. I'm going to DIY it, right? I'm going to show I got a certification. I'm going to apply to an apprenticeship, or I'm going to come and view our jobs board and see what kind of jobs out there, because there's just an incredible employment gap right now. Yeah. Employers need people. I think we're going to be really short, almost 2,500 people in a lot of these fields in just Arizona.
Totally agree with that. I can completely agree with that piece and understand the demand of it. I think where I have a little bit of concern here is that you've said a couple times now, one, you said free before for students to go through. And I think directly related to that of relying on WIOA funds to be able to do that. And so our other caution is schools potentially setting up to siphon off funds from government agencies to essentially be able to drive revenue for themselves, ultimately, though, at the detriment of the students, without necessarily having any significant advantage in the marketplace, to Ms. Kelly's point. And you are now the second school within 2 months that has come forward with what has traditionally been at least some level of hands-on experience needed that is purely providing online experience only. And I don't know your background, Mr. Turley, by any means, nor do I profess to suggest that I do, but we can all appreciate to you the points that you made, the safety aspects of it. And there is one thing to potentially electrocute yourself online in a simulation, versus not realizing when you put a tool down in a particular area, because that's not part of the simulation, that you run the risk of making an electrical connection that could potentially create harm as well. And so, to Ms. Kelly's point, we're trying to get our arms around the fact of, one, making sure schools aren't setting themselves up, not suggesting you are, to siphon off of government made available funds, and two, that the actual education that's being provided gives the students some type of actual benefit in the employment side of that, that leads to a positive outcome. And this is definitely new ground that we are embracing and trying to understand while trying to be cautious with our students. But that said, I just wanted to appreciate your business model from that. It does feel like your entry into it will be at least professing to students that they can come in, take these courses potentially free of charge because of the WIOA funds available to them. And that would be, is that the intent of your marketing and enrollment to this program?
We see that as a component. We've built our own. Well, we have an open source LMS, and we have engineers on our team that have made sure that we can get that cost as low as possible in terms of being at that $9.99. And I'd love it to be even lower, where it's approachable to folks to see this as a course to be way more exposed to the electrical field. And like I said, I've hired a lot of people. And if someone comes to me and they have this listed on their resume, they could speak to the things they've trained. I'm going to think of them higher than someone who has not taken this course and who's been trained in some of these things. If you put them up next to, let's say they have some great in-person trade schools in the Phoenix area, I know them, love to partner with them. They're going to stand up. Right? So there's just step functions of where we feel like we want to make sure you can have experience and speak to it in a job interview that says no experience required. So yes, we believe we can sell a $9.99 course to folks that are interested in learning more. And we do provide a jobs board that brings you jobs based on your level too. So that's also what we provide, is that we stay with you and promote, and we'll be reaching out and I'll be trying to place these people. That's really, I think, where we find we offer a differentiator of going with our program, is that I will not legally say that you're guaranteed to have a job, but I will do everything I possibly can to go get you one, as much as I can legally comment and say that we will do. That's definitely a part of where we believe we're going to give a leg up, is creating these partnerships with local universities and local employers here. That's a big focus for us.
We definitely appreciate that. I won't belabor the discussion as much as just to recall for the board, last time we did review a school of this nature at our last meeting, we did approve them, but I think we set an expectation that they actually come back within 6 months to be reviewed from their financial performance and understanding where they were drawing funds from, and then ultimately what type of outcomes were resulting with the students actually being able to secure employment, and what that looks like, if I remember correctly. Is that accurate, Mr. LaMountain?
That is correct.
Yeah. So that may be a similar consideration here as well. No further questions for me.
Okay, any other questions for board members or staff? Does anybody want to put on that stipulation about coming back in 6 months or a year?
I would be very supportive of, if you were to make a motion to include that stipulation in it, within 6 months to just come back for a review in regards to the financial performance, where the funds are coming from a percentage standpoint, and then ultimately what the outcomes are related to any students going through the program.
6 months is a pretty short period of time, though.
It's a relatively short program.
Yeah, but when are they? When are you starting the programs?
Yeah, we'd love to be able to start as soon as we're granted license. We're built and
tomorrow.
Yeah. The holding cost of having a company. Yeah.
Sure.
So if we have you come back in 6 months, you could have a set of financial statements for us to look at.
Sure. Yeah. Like I said, we want to meet those KPIs that the WIOA sets. That's really a goal we have. ROI is a big piece of our value statement. We want people thinking about that. Job placements, those types of things. Happy to come back and review our metrics and make sure that they're meeting standards.
Okay. If we approve you today, are you willing to maintain the $15,000 surety bond?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Given that, I'll make a...
Mr. Ball, I do see that Ms. Rome has her hand up.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Ball, members of the board. I just wanted to let everybody know, so the 6 months timeframe from now would be November. Our next board meeting after that is usually in January. So 5 months would be October. There's a very slim possibility that there's a board meeting in December. So I don't know if you want to state within 6 months, if you want that at the 5 month October, or if you want to give them until January. That's just wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
I'm certainly supportive of January.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll make a motion that we approve the conditional non-accredited vocational program license application with the stipulation that $15,000 surety bond be maintained with the condition that the school comes back in January of 2026 with a 6 month financial statement, which could be an internal financial statement, not a QuickBooks or something similar to that. That's my motion.
Can I just ask for a quick amendment on that to include employment outcomes?
Okay. I add that to the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion.
I second.
Great. Ms. Kelly is a second. Any further discussion by the board? Hearing none, Mr. LaMountain?
Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. That's four ayes, no nays. That motion will pass.
Thank you. Mr. Turley, we're excited for you. We're excited to see you back in January timeframe. Please don't misread any of our comments from the standpoint of anything more than just trying to help take care of our students, as well as you as an educational institution. Set everyone up for success as best as possible. We're excited that you're broaching new ground here in the state of Arizona, and we look forward to seeing you in January. So thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Right. We'll do a quick call to public really quickly. Board members encourage public input. Presentations are limited to 5 minutes. However, please be advised the board is prohibited from discussing, considering, or taking action on any item that's not on the agenda. While additional public comments may be requested during the meeting, they are generally not allowed. So if you do have any call to the public or make any comments, Ms. Cardula, always a staple. We will start with you and see if there are any others, if you would just raise your hand. So, Ms. Cardula, welcome.
Yes, just a wonderful meeting. Thank you for all you do. I know you get paid tons of money for this effort. I appreciate your volunteer service, and congratulations to Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Ms. Cardula. And just for clarity, for the record, we are not compensated. But we do believe in the public and the community that we're doing this for. So thank you for that. Any other hands up? I'm not seeing any, Mr. LaMountain.
I do not see any.
All right.
Mary, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thanks for spending part of it with us. I can't believe you're still here.
Picking it out for an extra 11
minutes. Can't think of a better way.
We appreciate you so much. Appreciate the board. Appreciate the staff. We will officially adjourn at 12:12 p.m. on May 22nd, 2025. Have a wonderful rest of your day, a wonderful weekend, and Memorial Day. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.